This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Have you heard the Affordable Care Act is getting up and running today? In case that name means nothing to you, I'm sure you recognize the title Obamacare. But a lot of what you hear about Obamacare might not be true, and some of it might be hard to understand. So today, Where We Live, we're going to try and answer as many of your questions as we can. We have some great resources online. Go to WNPR.org and check out our page that has Obamacare Explained 101 style and an Obamacare calculator that helps you figure out how much things cost. We'll also get some of your questions with calls at 860-275-7266, and we definitely want to hear from you today. You can also email where we live at WNPR.org or tweet us at Where We Live. We're on CTN, the Connecticut Network, today as well. And we're joined in the studio by Kevin Counihan, who is CEO of Connecticut's Health Insurance Exchange. It's called Access Health CT. You've been hearing about them a lot on our air and all over the airwaves every place. And Kevin, it's good to have you in on this very important first day. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, John.
Also joining us in studio is Zach Cooper, who's an assistant professor of health policy and economics at Yale. He's the director of Yale's new Institution for Social Policy Studies. It's a health policy center. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also in studio with us, two healthcare reporters who've been covering this beat for quite some time. Jeff Cohen, who reports for WNPR. Hi, Jeff.
Morning, John.
And also Ariel Levin-Becker, the health reporter at the Connecticut Mirror. Hello there, Ariel.
Hi.
So let's start with you, Kevin. This exchange is up and running today. The majority of the questions we've gotten so far from listeners is the site actually up and running? As of earlier this morning, it was not. What's the status of the website for people to get signed up?
The status of the site right now is that it is up and running. It's accesshealthct.com. Individuals, families, small businesses, which in our state is defined as 1 to 50 employees, may brokers, assisters, policymakers, interested stakeholders, may all go on the site right now, shop and compare. We've had 110,000 hits to our website so far today. 76,000 of them have been from Connecticut residents. So it's active. We're very excited and looking forward to enrollment.
As of right now, we're looking at it in the other room. I don't know that it's actually active just yet. And it's just a little bit after 9 o'clock here. It still says visit us on October 1st. And so we're hopefully going to get that up and running as soon as possible. I know that this morning on Morning Edition with Steve Inskeep, President Obama was talking about the fact that we are going to expect, not just in Connecticut, but nationwide, some glitches along the way. Maybe you can talk about what you've had to confront so far as slowdowns, unexpected things. What might we expect in the next few days or so as this gets up and running?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because it's a highly complex implementation. Basically, what we've done in 10 months is what most private firms wouldn't try to do in 3 years. So the execution of this is something which is dependent on such things as the Federal Data Hub. And so one of the questions that I'm going to be emailing about when you're talking to somebody else is exactly if we're having some connection issues with the Federal Data Hub. But I think that complexity is one. I think the risk of some hacking is always a second. But, you know, we've established a very secure, a very stable and very private system. So we've gone out of our way to make sure that information that's entered on that system is secure and private.
Has there been hacking that you know of?
There have been attempts at hackings. Yes, there have been attempts at that. There are probably attempts at hacking at almost every website, but yes, we've had some.
As far as other potential slowdowns, we've certainly heard that people who oppose the Affordable Care Act have said, let's clog the lines. Let's just get as many people calling as possible to make sure that it doesn't go very well. Has there been anything like that you know of so far? Do you expect and have you prepared for something like that?
So the answer to the first question is no, that we've not had that type of issue yet. Two is that we are expecting something like that, the magnitude of which is a little hard to feel because when you look at the research data in our state, 70% of Connecticut residents support health reform and the implementation of Access Health Connecticut. And we are prepared for it, though.
Ariel Levin-Becker, I know you cover health policy, and you've been covering an awful lot of things that happen at the state level when it comes to instituting brand new systems, including things like the new Department of Social Services system. What do you expect to see? What are you hearing from people about the ramp-up of this and how you think it's going to work in these first couple days, weeks, months?
I think a lot of people are eager to go on and be able to do some comparisons, both looking at what it would cost for them to buy plans. And also, I know there's been a lot of interest in which doctors and hospitals are participating in all the plans. That information hasn't been available. It's supposed to be available today. So a lot of people have questions about that.
When it comes to the information that's going to be available on the site, people are going to be looking for everything from pricing information, Kevin, to the sorts of information that Ariel was just talking about, what doctors are involved, just basic 101 questions. Is it all going to be there and very easy to find for people?
It's all going to be there. Ease can sometimes be a relative term. Based on the research we've done with consumers over the summer, most have found the site to be pretty intuitive. Clearly, there's going to be some that are going to need some help. The research, frankly, showed that roughly 97% of applicants are going to require some type of help. Now, you know, when you look at the connector in Massachusetts 7 years ago, it took an average of 18 interactions before an individual enrolled for coverage. So those were either visits to a website, calling the call center, speaking to a broker or an assister. So people, this is an expensive purchase, and it's complicated. And people need the time to have their hand held for the purchase experience. Our call center, for example, is staffed for an average phone time of 45 minutes.
An average phone time of 45 minutes. So people should expect that when they call up to enroll, it'll take at least that long, maybe a bit longer, maybe a little bit less time?
Well, our average phone call thus far is just under 8 minutes. But my broader point was that we are prepared for long calls. And we are prepared to actually hold people's hands through this enrollment process so they get their questions answered and they feel safe to answer the types of questions they want.
Kevin, you've been working hard, I know, for the past years to try and spread the word about the Affordable Care Act and do a lot of marketing, and you've been out there very aggressively. But there was a UConn poll that came out last week that said, in large part, people nationwide still don't like the Affordable Care Act. They like the idea of health insurance. They like having health insurance, but they don't necessarily like this law. And the takeaway message from the pollsters at UConn was that there still needs to be more outreach, and the outreach really hasn't gotten far enough. What's your sense on that?
I would agree with that. You know, it's always interesting about the data about favorability. You know, often you see polls that show 42% opposed, 37% in favor. Frankly, my experience has been that I think the vast majority on either side actually don't know what they're talking about. And that's not their fault. It's a law that's brand new. People are always a little bit suspicious of big government. But what I believe is that over the coming months, as people see the value of the subsidies and the impact it has on their ability to choose and to make insurance more affordable, that they are going to find the program much more attractive.
Zach Cooper, I'd like you to weigh in and sort of talk about what you've seen so far about this last question, about whether or not people actually understand what this law is supposed to do. Because from Kevin's standpoint, the people who are running these exchanges across the country, it's very important to get people enrolled, to get people understanding how this is going to work. It's frankly, right now, a public relations campaign as much as it is a healthcare plan.
It is. And I think that's what's been so frustrating about the noise that's been out there, all this political noise. And I think in many ways, the political noise is really, really much hugely exaggerating the sort of policy substance that's in here. This is a pretty straightforward piece of policy. You know, what it's doing is looking at the 8% who are uninsured in Connecticut, so not a huge share of the population, and saying, can we get insurance coverage for them? Now, if we said that in the abstract, that's not hugely controversial. You know, if you looked at what's happening, the Ted Cruz talks and all the sort of chatter, you'd think this is a much bigger deal than it is. What this is really doing is giving insurance coverage for folks who are struggling. And I think once they feel the insurance coverage, once they actually engage with the policy, that's when we're hoping to see the awareness go up.
Ariel?
I think part of the confusion also, though, is that the law is fairly complex in terms of how it affects people. People get insurance in a lot of different ways, and the way it will affect people depending on their situation really varies. There was a poll a couple days ago from the Kaiser Family Foundation that found about 51% overall people didn't know how the law was going to affect their family. That was 67% of the uninsured felt that way. So I think that's part of it, that you can understand in the abstract how it might work, but it really varies for people on their own situation. So I think there's a lot of insecurity out there.
And it's a complicated policy. I mean, it's worth unpacking what it is. I mean, so one of the things that I think we have to be very clear on is if you're getting insurance from your employer, nothing's going to change. You're not going to notice a difference from last week to 6 months from now. The people who are going to feel the difference are folks who aren't having insurance coverage right now or who are buying it, you know, on their own through the individual market, who've really been priced out for decades.
I think both my healthcare reporters want to jump into Jeff quickly.
I have a quick question. Just on, you mentioned Ted Cruz and the arguments that we're hearing from folks who don't like the Affordable Care Act. This is for both of you. Is there a way to quantify? Because we all know of real experiences. We've probably both interviewed people who've said, my company is cutting back hours. My company is cutting back considering cutting back the number of employees that it has. And my company is considering dumping its benefits and encouraging its employees to go onto the exchange. I've interviewed people in all of those scenarios.
And we heard yesterday on Tom Ashbrook's program people talking about having to pay a little bit more for their premiums because essentially their employer's plans are going to be charging almost a tax in order to help pay for Obamacare. These are all things that we're hearing.
So yes. Let's assume that there are some numbers of people that fall into those categories. Are you able to quantify how many people are touched by those scenarios yet and actually weigh where this is still in the greatest good for the greatest number of people?
So I'll start and then you chip in about Massachusetts. The best thing I think we can do is look at Massachusetts and say what happened when they did this. And the reality is we didn't see job losses. I mean, it was certainly a fear, but the reality is we didn't see anything. So I don't know that that's really going to materialize. The others, and we talk to Chamber of Commerce and we say, you know, what's preventing small businesses from growing? Their number one concern is healthcare costs. This is a bill designed to get healthcare costs under control. So I think certainly the fear is there. I don't know if the fears are realized in the evidence that we have coming out of Massachusetts.
Kevin?
Yeah, it's an interesting point that Zach just raised because, again, if you look at the one state where this has been implemented for some time, which is 7 years now in Massachusetts, there was the same type of fear that because the penalty for employers was so low, it was $295 per employee per year to drop coverage, that there would be a sort of momentum for employers to drop coverage and pay this small penalty, which was certainly much cheaper than providing insurance coverage. It turned out just the opposite happened. At the time health reform started in 2006 in Massachusetts, 70% of firms offered employer-sponsored insurance. As of 2010, that had gone up to 77%. Now, some papers and columnists had all predicted that it would drop to 60%, 50%, which is more like the national average. And the exact opposite happened.
Ariel?
Kevin, I'm curious about your thoughts on what's likely to happen with small businesses. In 2011, there was a study in Connecticut that found that about half of small businesses were offering plans that wouldn't meet the minimum coverage requirements that's going to take effect in 2014. So essentially, if they plan to continue offering coverage, they'll have to presumably pay more for more comprehensive health care. And I'm curious whether you think the extent to which that's going to happen or companies are going to look at dropping their plans and letting people buy through the exchange.
Well, so it's a very good question, and quite frankly, I don't know what's going to happen, and I learned from Massachusetts not to predict, but I do think your point is valid. I think we're going to see firms at the lower end of the small group market, maybe firms with five or fewer, seven or fewer, are going to be looking at the options of the public exchanges for their employees. I'm not sure that the tax credit options under the Affordable Care Act may be as desirable to small firms in Connecticut just because the minimum salary levels tend to be much lower in the Northeast, so that the value of those credits mean a whole lot more in a Mississippi or Alabama. But I think, quite frankly, it's early to predict.
We're taking a lot of your questions now at 860-275-7266. As we talk about the new health care exchange, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, it starts today in Connecticut, and we're joined in studio by Kevin Counihan, the CEO of the health care exchange, Ariel Levin-Becker from the Connecticut Mirror, Jeff Cullen from WNPR, and Zach Cooper from Yale University, all joining us to answer some of your questions today. Andrea is calling from Hartford. Hello, Andrea. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I have a quick question for you. So if my employer currently offers health insurance, it's not considered affordable. Can I drop my current health insurance, go on the exchange, pick up insurance, and then, because I know they're going to be changing the contributions in January, review what they will be offering and then just drop the insurance that I pick up now and go back on their plan? Is that something that I'm able to do?
So, hi. So the answer to your question is maybe. So if the value of your contribution for single coverage is more than 9.5% of your income, you would have the option to look at the exchange, look at potential subsidies, and not take your employer's plan. Open enrollment, as you may know, runs from October 1st today through March 31st of 2014. However, the cutoff dates for January 1st coverage is December 15th enrollment, and in March, it's March 15th. So you'd have to sequence those dates in your decision.
Kevin, could you explain that, though, a little bit further in terms of if someone has insurance now through their employer, can they just opt, regardless of how much they make, can they opt to say, you know what, I don't want that insurance. I want to go into the exchange.
The answer to that, again, is that it's complicated. The answer is that the employee's contribution for single coverage has to be more than 9.5% of their income.
Which means it has to be considered by the law unaffordable.
Correct.
So if it's unaffordable now, yes, you can look into the exchange. If it's not unaffordable, you're stuck with what you got.
That's correct.
So theoretically, to your earlier point, Jeff, another thing that companies may be doing over time is giving their employees insurance, but increasingly more unaffordable insurance, thus potentially pushing them onto this exchange. Is this another concern? I mean, we've talked about, is there the possibility of people getting their jobs cut or their hours cut? This is another concern that essentially you're offering your employees the worst available health care coverage and say, well, maybe they'll just opt out.
Yeah, but that's a concern for the employers. I mean, if I were trying to hire people, is that what I would do to get the best employees? You know, as a firm owner, I want to keep my employees happy, and it's another form of compensation.
I know. And, Andrea, I hope that we answered your question. I appreciate your phone call.
Thank you very much. Yes, you have.
I want to actually play something before we move off of the small business question. This morning, Harriet Jones, our business reporter, was talking about the Affordable Care Act and small businesses and how small businesses themselves can get involved. She talked with Kevin Galvin, who's a small business owner. He said that as things were rolling out today, 10-1, he wasn't sure how many small businesses were going to be taking advantage of the small business possibilities for the Affordable Care Act. Let's listen.
I didn't think we would be rolling into 10-1 and startup, and there'd be the large number of small businesses I talked to that are taking a wait-and-see attitude.
Maybe you can explain what's in this for small businesses themselves, Kevin.
Well, I think there are several things. One is increased choice. For example, on our small business exchange, which is a full AC, Affordable Care Act compliant small business exchange, of which we are one of five in the country that are going to be open in October, there is the ability to buy on a defined contribution basis a health insurance for employees of small firms, which include Anthem, Connecticut, Healthy CT, which is the new co-op plan, as well as United Healthcare. So I think there's more options for employers. There's no membership fee to join in order to offer this coverage, and there's broader choice.
Kevin, who has been pushing for this for quite some time, essentially says he's surprised more small businesses aren't getting involved. What do you think is the slowdown? It seems as though small businesses might be jumping at this opportunity.
Well, you know, it's been a complex political dynamic, as we all know, this year. When the employer mandate, for example, was deferred several months ago, many small businesses polled thought that meant that they had some kind of mandate and that was deferred, and thus they don't have to do anything or look at options. So, you know, to get at your earlier question, there's just a lot of noise around communication, around facts, around myth, and it just makes it more of an imperative for folks on our staff to communicate effectively.
We're going to be talking about some of these myths and misconceptions, some other things about this Obamacare law that maybe are true but are very hard to understand. We're going to take your phone calls at 860-275-7266. As we head into this break, Jeff Cohen, you shared with us a couple songs. You know, you've been covering this whole rollout of the Affordable Care Act and how it's been really presented to the public in a public relations campaign here in Connecticut. I know other states are doing the same thing.
We're at the point of the discussion where we're talking about healthcare songs. Cover Oregon, yeah. I think is the name, and they came out with a song about the Affordable Care Act in Oregon, and this is what you'll hear.
It's a very Portlandia sort of schedule. Listen to that going out, and then take more of your questions here on Where We Live.
I'll sing for the place that my heart is called home, where the salty Sierra meets the cold mountain snow, where I'm free to be healthy and happy and strong, and live long in Oregon. Long live the Oregon spirit, long live the Oregon way.
This is Where We Live.
Wanted to avoid a shutdown,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to stop Obamacare. You've ended up with a shutdown, and Obamacare is in effect. Were the tactics the right tactics?
You know, I actually believe they were, but it's been fascinating because in some ways we had to go through, I don't want to refer to it as dance, but this process
mm-hmm.
for a lot of the American people to actually start to tune in and understand what we were talking about, where the concerns were, and where we thought actually the way the healthcare law is written is damaging the economy and creating sort of the part-timing of America.
That's Arizona Republican David Schweikert, one of the House members who supported the effort to defund the law known as Obamacare, speaking with Steve Inskeep this morning on Morning Edition. I'm John Dankowski here on Where We Live. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act as it rolls out here in Connecticut. And obviously, there's a lot to talk about today, not just the fact that this healthcare exchange is up and running, but Kevin Counihan, CEO of the Healthcare Exchange. How is the government shutdown, the federal government shutdown today, affecting you, if at all?
Well, it seems not to be affecting us too much. We've enrolled our first member about 5 minutes ago. We've got 764 active applications in terms of people actually getting prices and such right now. For a site that's been up for 25 minutes, it's not bad. We're just extremely excited at the office. And to be honest with you, John, I'm looking forward to getting out of here and celebrating.
Don't start celebrating too early. So they say, don't spike the football too early. Ariel, go ahead.
Kevin, do you know if with the federal shutdown, the people who are sort of going to be in charge of maintaining the federal data hub, are they on the job still?
Yes, they are. We've been in communication with them basically all day and night. And the folks that are administering the data hub, the folks that are administering the grant allocations, because all the states like us have to draw down funds in order to keep our operations going. We do become self-sufficient, as you folks know, in a year. So far, it seems to be that it's not affecting us.
I think one of the things we got to talk a little bit about here is when we talk about healthcare reform, it sort of turns into this abstraction, Obamacare, ACA, exchange, all this jargon. There are 50 million Americans who don't have insurance coverage, 26,000 people who die because of it. I mean, there are extraordinary harms to our previous healthcare system. This addresses it. And so I think sort of lost in all this sort of technocratic minutia are people who really were getting shortchanged who now get insurance coverage, the first person signed up today. I mean, that's a tremendously big deal.
It is. Thank you. I thought you said that very well. The other thing I would just add is that we're all paying for it anyway. This sense that somehow these 50 million people are just pretty much on their own is a myth. The CBO calculated that over $1,000 in each of our premiums is added for payment for uncompensated health care. So we need to get everybody insured. It has to be part of our culture. It has to be an assumption when people reach a certain age, like they get auto insurance for their car, that they get health insurance.
It's worth looking at Massachusetts. I mean, what happened? Well, the length of stay for hospital care went down. The amount of preventive medicine went up. And folks going into the emergency room to get care went down as well. So this idea of spend more, get more, it's actually spend less, get more.
Something we've also seen, though, is a shortage of primary care doctors. A lot of people aren't able to get the things that they need in a state like Massachusetts because there literally hasn't been the infrastructure built around it.
I mean, I'll let Kevin talk to that. I actually don't think that's what happened. I think all the evidence actually suggests that that didn't occur, that a lot of the fears about long queues for primary care never actually materialized.
That's actually not what I've seen in analysis of Massachusetts and the number of primary care physicians available to treat the people who are needed. And again, it's a lot of people taking a look at the same information in different ways. But, Kevin,
Just to Zach's point, and I actually have a little data on this.
Yeah.
The wait time for primary care did go up, but it went up from 38 days to 44 days. So for adding about 700,000 newly insured, without a proportionate expansion in the primary care pool, that's not a huge amount of time. And let me tell you quickly, John, what happened. One was that a lot more primary care began being done by LPNs, RNs, and physician assistants. The second was that firms such as CVS and others opened MinuteClinics, so people with an earache, a sore throat, and other things were often going to these clinics. So it took some of the heat off of primary care.
Let's go to the phones because a lot of people have questions for us. Rashim is calling from New Britain. Hello there. You're on Where We Live.
Yes, hello. How you doing?
Doing well. What's up?
I just wanted to make a statement, man. To be honest with you, I'm truly excited that we're really embarking on this new place in healthcare. I mean, you know, as being a pastor and being a business owner, you know, I've experienced with young people who come to the congregation who have not insurance. And, you know, just one quick example, this young man playing basketball, he was using somebody else's inhaler because he couldn't afford health care for himself. Or, you know, or a young lady who was going to school and could not afford health, would not go to the emergency room because she was afraid of what the bill was going to be later on in life. So she sat around in pain. So I think it's very important that the word continues to get out. I applaud you guys for even having the conversation. But I think it needs to go out because it's a shame that we do have insurance on our cars, insurance on our house, but we won't insure the very things that those things were made for. So I just want to say I'm excited, and I hope that y'all continue to advertise and get the word out so that people can be able to take advantage of this exchange.
Rasheem, thank you very much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Zach?
I mean, I think the important thing here, what's going to sink the Affordable Care Act isn't Ted Cruz and it's not filibusters. It's this not working, people not being happy. Now, the converse is when I think folks experience their care, if they like it, the program's going to succeed. So I think we're going to know in a year.
Yeah, I think Zach's absolutely right about that. I guess one thing I would say is that I think in terms of the execution, this is analogous to Medicare Part D in 2006. And that really took about 3 years to stabilize and get people comfortable with information, the website, and the processes. Frankly, I think today is the first day of a 3-year journey.
Jeff?
Kevin and Zach, to both of you, is there? There's we all know that there's coverage and there's coverage, right? You go to one employer, you have a certain set of benefits. You go to a different employer, you may have a different set of benefits, and they might cost you more or less depending on where you are. How leaving the price aside, how good is the coverage offerings? Are they comprehensive? Or is someone newly insured going to go and find that procedures that were covered under their prior employer are not covered under the Affordable Care Act?
Well, do you want to talk a little bit about what the benefits packages look like? I mean, one of the things that changed here was what an insurance plan actually has to be. I mean, previously I could basically sell you a shoe and call it health insurance.
That's right.
Now what we've said is it needs to cover certain services. So it's got to offer preventive care. It can't stop covering you if you spent a whole lot of money. So you'd see these patients who were going in for chemotherapy, really, you know, terrible illnesses. And the insurance company would turn to them and say, hey, we're done. You spent $250,000. We're not going to cover it anymore. And that's ended. And so the value of these policies, the amount of money they're offering, is actually going up.
So the services they're offering are going up.
Yep.
The price, therefore, goes up?
In some cases. So you're getting more and paying some more for it. And that's been some of the controversy. So some of the folks have said, you know what, we shouldn't regulate what is and what isn't in the plan and should let the market decide. The Affordable Care Act essentially says there are some things that just need to be covered, that we know that people need primary care. And so as a result, we're going to mandate that every insurance plan covers it.
Zach said that extremely well. The plans are divided up essentially into three metal tiers in our state. Gold represents the most expensive plan, which covers the most. Silver, which is probably the most common, is the mid-priced. And bronze. For young people, there's a catastrophic plan.
When you say covers the most, you mean on financially, not necessarily
correct.
The type of coverage that you're going to get, but when you go to the doctor, it's the percentage of how much you pay versus how much the insurance company pays.
Thank you for that clarification, yes.
And if you want to find out more, we actually have a few resources available online at WNPR.org, some answers to Obamacare 101 questions and also a healthcare calculator as well if you go to WNPR.org. And the Access Health CT website is now up and running. Kevin Counihan is here from the Health Insurance Exchange, Jeff Cohen from WNPR, Ariel Levin Becker from the Connecticut Mirror, and Zach Cooper from Yale University. Got a lot more people who want to join us with questions at 860-275-7266. Let's go to Jim in Glastonbury. Hi there, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have a question about my own health insurance. I'm a private pay, and I have my own doctor. I'm wondering if my doctor can, in fact, refuse my health care if I go to the exchange.
So, Jim,
go ahead, Kevin, yeah.
Jim, very good question, and thanks for asking that. And the answer is no. The way the physician's participation works is the same as it works under commercial plans, which means that the insurance companies offered on the exchange on the individual basis, which again is Anthem, Connecticut, and this new plan, Healthy Connecticut or Healthy CT, contract with groups of physicians, just as they do for a regular employer plan. And the networks for these plans have to meet certain network adequacy standards, meaning they have to have a certain amount of breadth in them to make sure that there's good coverage. Frankly, I don't know your physician, obviously, but if you go on our website, which is accesshealthct.com, you can find out quickly.
How did the fact that that Aetna pulled out of this this exchange hurt your overall ability to reach as many people as possible?
You know, Aetna's a terrific company, and we had a very good relationship with them and still do. Obviously, we were disappointed that they pulled out because we want to offer as much choice and competition in our state as possible. That being said, we've got very broad access to physicians and good competitive prices.
And I think that's a point worth emphasizing. You know, when you speak to CEOs of insurance companies, they're not saying that October 1 is the end-all, be-all. They're saying, let's take a look at this market. Let's see how it evolves. And over the next year or two or three, let's make a decision about whether to enter
but
these
markets. That's not what the CEO of Aetna was doing when he was standing up next to President Obama when this law was being signed, essentially saying, we're going to be part of this. After taking a look over the course of the last year, some of them said, yeah, you know what, maybe we don't want to be there on October 1st. Maybe we don't want to be there at all. The fact of the matter is they were standing there on the podium saying we're going to be part of this, and now they're not.
In certain states. So obviously Aetna is participating in exchanges in other states. They're not in Connecticut. And all of these insurers are looking at the different market conditions before the exchanges got launched. And then, you know, we'll see if they adjust as this develops. I think the better the exchange does, the more you're going to see insurance companies coming in and offering.
Before we get to our next call, Ariel, you have something?
I had a question actually going back to an earlier point about coverage. I've heard from a lot of people like our earlier caller about who are very excited about the options for coverage that are coming. But there are also a lot of people who expect there will still be people who are uninsured. If you talk to people who work at free clinics or who treat the uninsured, they're actually expecting to get busier. There are free clinics in the state that are expanding. So I guess I'm wondering, what are you going to consider a success? What level of uninsured do you think is a realistic target in 5 years or
There's a goal. So our goal in 5 years is to be in the 2-3% uninsured level. It frankly took Massachusetts about 5 years to get down to the 2% level. Massachusetts was at 10.3% of uninsured in 2006, and we were at 9.6%.
Let's go to Brandon in Guilford. Hi, Brandon. Go ahead.
Hi. I think this question is a little maybe custom tailored to me, but maybe it affects other people too. I'm a 25-year-old male who lives in Connecticut. I've only lived here for about a year. I'm engaged, and I'm wondering, as a young person, I'm going to obviously be required to have health insurance under the Affordable Health Care Act. Who is it to say, what is affordable and not? As somebody who doesn't go to the doctor a lot and doesn't, need medical attention, I think I've been, maybe two times in my life to the hospital. And I, as a young person, I would rather be saving for my future than having to, shell out X amount of dollars every month for something that I'm not going to use. So I'm just wondering what the consequences, if we don't use it, would be and how they're going to regulate that.
Brandon, great question.
So, hi, Brandon. So you're raising a very good point, and thank you for asking it. So the answer to your first question is that given your age, and while I don't know your income, statistically speaking, with the subsidies available, this insurance is going to be extremely affordable for you. Now, that's, again, if you're below, say, $46,000 for an individual, for example, the insurance should be quite affordable for you. Now, with respect to your second issue about is this really good value? Am I not better off just taking the value of that money and saving for my future? I would frankly argue that by buying health insurance, you are saving for your future. Because while you're absolutely right, you've been in great health in the past, and congratulations for that, and I certainly wish you all the best for the future. We just never know in this world. And things are so unpredictable, as we all know, that frankly, it's actually a pretty good financial purchase.
But the argument that Brandon and a lot of other Brandons around the country would have is that's his decision to decide whether or not that's a good gamble for him or not. It shouldn't really be yours or President Obama's or anybody else's.
Well, so I think there's a really important conversation we have, which is, so I ride a motorcycle. This is one of these things I think about all the time. say I'm cruising on the Merritt, I dump my bike, I go off the road and I don't have insurance. We, I think, all agree that I should probably get medical care. As I'm on the side of the road, I'm in the ditch, I need care, that no matter who I am, no matter what circumstances I'm in, I should get it. And I think the backside of that social contract is that we should then have an obligation to pay for it. So if we're going to expect that everybody should get care under all circumstances, which I think we all agree on, I think we should all agree that there's a, you know, we have to pay for that, that rights and obligations to others also have costs.
And one of the things some people might say is we probably shouldn't be as concerned about paying for your care as maybe someone who's driving a car that's a little safer than a motorcycle, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right, but I think the real question is, you know, do we let the tail wag the dog in these extreme examples? I think the honest one is that there are a lot of folks who don't get it for cost reasons, go in, and then we end up subsidizing. And the question is, what's the most efficient way to get care for them? I think back to Brandon, the other thing we know is that the leading cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States is healthcare costs. So there's just a lot of folks out there who are rolling the dice, who are doing really well most of the time, and then have an incredibly high-cost illness and get broken by
it. I'm flipping the coin and going to Ariel first. Go ahead.
I just wanted to add on the issue of medical bankruptcy. That's absolutely a big contributor to bankruptcies. But what the research has found is that one of the major factors, a lot of those people have insurance, and one of the big issues is that when they get sick, they're not working. And so the issue is really lost income as well.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. And that interview we heard earlier, John, with Steve Inskeep, got to the point of, I think the last offer on the table from congressional Republicans last night wasn't to defund Obamacare, if I recall from the interview correctly, but it was to abolish the individual mandate. And this gets to the heart of the phone call, which is there's the social contract aspect of the individual mandate. Shouldn't, you know, isn't this part of collectively living together where we take care of our own? There's that, but there's also the actuarial side of it. And the president wouldn't budge on that. And when I say actuarial side, I mean insurance only works in this case if as many people with as many different types of healthcare backgrounds enroll, the sick and the healthy, the old and the young. And that's why the president can't budge on that, because in Inskeep's words, it would destroy the insurance industry. I don't know if that was hyperbole or not.
And that's why enrollment matters so tremendously. What we want to see is getting young people into the market so that we do have a distribution of risks across the population. The other thing is insurance markets do better with the more people who are enrolled.
But in large part, Kevin Counihan, and we have to go to a break here in a moment, I mean, this really is a political conversation. What you're trying to do in informing people and getting people involved in this, as you've already said, is in part hamstrung by the political conversation we're having. And when you have actuarial concerns on one hand, we've got to have everyone in the pool so that we spread the risk around. And on the other hand, we have words like freedom and liberty. It is a very hard political case to be made, frankly.
You're absolutely right, John. However, if you go back in history a bit and look at when Medicare was implemented in 1965, there was just enormous political noise about the implementation of that. It's called communist efforts, socialism. The AMA was completely against it. It's not unusual in our history for major social programs to have this type of dynamic. This noise is going to settle out, particularly as people see the value of the subsidies and the affordability impact.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the president has said over and over again that really does resonate with people is nobody really likes Social Security. Nobody really likes Medicare. And now everyone seems to like those things. We're going to take some of your calls when we get back at 860-275-7266. Now, you heard earlier, we heard a pro-Obamacare song. It was the state song of Oregon trying to sell its health care exchange. Here's another one. It's a response from Reason TV. We'll be right back.
What's hated by unions has businesses wary, and dropping coverage like the skin secondary, causing thousands of layoffs, taking its toll. What's so good for people that they're forced to enroll? What's a law that's so good, folks who passed and defended it, see it in God?
This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, it's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse. We'll continue our conversation about health care, also the impact of the government shutdown in Connecticut, some new state laws that just went into effect, and we'll consider who really pays for illegal activity in our society. Join Colin McEnroe, as always, and me in The Wheelhouse tomorrow on Where We Live. Today is the launch day for Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and here in Connecticut, the health insurance exchange is underway. Kevin Counihan is the CEO, and he joins us in studio along with reporters Jeff Cohen and Ariel Levin-Becker. Jeff from WNPR, Ariel from the Connecticut Mirror, and Zach Cooper, who is director of Yale's new Institution for Social Policy Studies, Health Policy Center at Yale University. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. Let's get to a few more questions in a moment. Jeff, one thing that I want to talk with you about is you've been covering something that I want to make sure that we get through a little bit here. The cost of this to the taxpayers is another one of these political questions. I know you have tried to raise some questions about getting information about the call centers, about how much this is actually costing the state of Connecticut. Maybe just quickly go through this and we can ask Kevin about this.
Sure. This is in my role as reporter, as Nudge, and advocate for the full disclosure. Kevin and I are on opposite sides of a point on freedom of information here. Call centers in Connecticut are one way that you can call in. You don't have to just enroll online. There's a portion of the population that will call in, and that call center staffed by, I think it's 40 or a total of 70 people in New York and Connecticut. And the question is, well, the question I had was, well, how much are we paying for that? And so I asked for the contract just to look at that. And it turns out that that pricing, that, that Kevin's agency considers that pricing itself to be not publicly disclosable.
It's a trade secret, according to the company Maximus, which runs the healthcare center.
Right.
And because it's a trade secret, when we ask for the document that says how much does it cost Connecticut taxpayers to get this work done by a private company through a state contract, we're essentially told you can't find out. Kevin Counihan, why is that? Why can't we know how much the state is paying Maximus to actually do this work?
Well, just a couple of things. First, since we're talking about the call center, I'd like your listeners to know what the call center number is.
Absolutely.
Which is 855-805-4325. So that's 855-805-4325. And to Jeff's point, and I appreciate his raising that, it is well-staffed, and as I said, we're prepared for an average phone call of 45 minutes. And I actually don't think Jeff and I are as far apart on this issue as he may think. The reality is that the state of Connecticut and state of Connecticut taxpayers aren't paying one nickel for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. This is all coming from federal money. And so we're all federal taxpayers, you could argue, but it's not.
Well, I think it's a fairly compelling argument that we are indeed all federal taxpayers.
That is correct. But I just want the listeners to understand, because this issue comes up a lot, that with respect to state of Connecticut money, state of Connecticut government money, or state of Connecticut tax money, there is no money implementing this. Thirdly, the CBO has shown that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, is meant to be deficit neutral. So it's actually being funded by other types of fees and levies, but it's not adding to the deficit. So now let's get to your question. So the law, as I understand it, and I'm not a lawyer, the law allows firms, whether they contract with either the government or with private firms, to be able to make confidential and private certain issues, things that they consider a competitive advantage. Now, in this case, price is considered by this vendor to be one of those, and they redacted that price. They've issued their own press release, which has said that they think the value of the contract over 3 years is $15 million, which means it's about $5 million a year. Now, those are their numbers. I don't know all the assumptions behind that, but those are the numbers that they gave.
And just very quickly, because we want to get to some other questions, it seems as though if the company is saying it's going to be $15 million over 3 years, we should know how they've arrived at that.
Well,
how exactly it is that we are paying, as taxpayers, we are paying them to do the work that the state has contracted with them to do.
Well, and, you know, that's a very compelling piece. And that argument's been made very effectively by Jeff. The reality is that both the federal government, CMS, HHS, SSIO, have contracts with absolutely redacted information on price and on other service features. Many of our web vendors have not redacted their price. And they're up on our website where you can see that fully. But a firm has the ability to do so.
And probably that's a conversation we'll have to continue at another time as we continue our conversation, our long-form conversation about freedom of information in the state. But thank you very much for that. Bill's in New Milford. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm a buyer in the individual health insurance market. I'm self-employed. I've been with Connecticut for about 6 years. I got a letter from them yesterday saying that the plan I'm currently on will be discontinued because it's not compliant with the Affordable Care Act. So I naturally was very curious to see what you guys had to offer this morning. I will say for me, your website is not working. It's still not working. I either get a blank page or a manager login page with some broken links, so you guys have some work to do there. I also think that the PR campaign largely has been pretty ineffective. I'm in PR for a living, so I pay attention to these things. You guys need to do a better job of getting the word out, but maybe you don't want to do that until you get this website working, because it's not. And so far, I'm pretty unimpressed with all this. And by the way, I voted for President Obama twice, so I'm in favor of health care reform.
Well, Bill, you've given Kevin a lot to answer here. Bill, thank you very much for that. You have any thoughts for Bill?
Well, Bill, I'm sorry we've disappointed you. We have enrolled a member already, and we have 768 people in the process of getting prices and such. So I appreciate very much the update that you provided. And with respect to the public relations campaign, it's interesting. The data that we researched in July with 851 Connecticut residents showed 70% approval for the Affordable Care Act and 30% awareness unaided. So, you know, I agree we have a ways to go, but I think we've made a start.
And quickly, before I get to you, Ariel, Molly had called in earlier and wanted to ask about storefront enrollment centers. We've talked about call centers. We talked about the website, storefront enrollment centers. This would be like Apple stores with a genius bar for affordable care.
That's correct. They should be open in about 2 weeks. Our first store is going to be in New Britain, and the one just a day or so after will be in New Haven. You're right, John, we actually stole the idea from Apple. We're going to have our own version of Genius Bars in the back, and we're excited to see how they work. They're going to be up 12 months a year.
Go ahead, Aria.
Just to pick up on one of the things Bill mentioned, he got a letter from his insurance company saying his plan is going to be discontinued. I've heard from other people who are getting those letters as well. And essentially what it is that the Affordable Care Act sets certain standards that plans have to cover in terms of what benefits they offer and also how much of your medical costs they'll have to pay, sort of what percentage, and also limits on how much you can be required to pay in terms of deductibles and copays. For a lot of people in Connecticut's individual market, the coverage they're going to need to have as of January 1st will have to be more comprehensive. For a lot of people, that might cost more. Now, potentially, that increased cost could be offset if they buy it through Access Health and qualify based on their income for some subsidies. But there are going to be a lot of people in Connecticut who might get similar letters to that and will need to make some changes.
Jeff, you wanted to raise something? We're running low on time.
Sure. I guess the question would be for Kevin, which is, here we are October 1st. A lot of rhetorical and political energy and operational energy has been put towards October 1st. How important is day one in a six-month enrollment period?
Well, as you know, Jeff, I consider this day one in a three-year enrollment period. And so I think it has it's sort of a nice metaphor for launching a major social program. But it, frankly, in the big picture, it doesn't have a lot of value.
I want to see if we have time for one more call here. Glenda in Glastonbury, you just got a 30 seconds or so. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. The comment I wanted to make is about young people. We're talking about young people subsidizing old and sick people. But the point is that the leading cause of death for young men is accidents. I believe I have that right. And that is the most unexpected thing, and that's really the point of insurance, is to ensure you against the unexpected. And I think we're not making enough of a point about that.
Glenda, thank you very much. I know, Zach, you might want to weigh in on that. Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Go ahead, Ariel.
I don't know about Glenda, but I know in some states the campaigns have been focused on moms trying to convince their children, their young adult children, of that exact point.
We got a tweet from Angel who says, ask Kevin if they need Spanish speakers to help Spanish-speaking people who might have more questions. Do you need help in this regard? Are you fully staffed to help people to answer these questions in a multiple of languages?
So our call center is fluent actually in 8 languages, and we have staff that through our call line we can actually do 115. But we would appreciate any help that people have and would love to hear from her.
The phone number again to get involved, it's 855-805-4325. Did I write that down right?
You did.
855-805-4325. And give them the website one more time if they want to try to enroll right now.
It's accesshealthct.com. And we appreciate everyone's support.
And we're going to put up some more information on our website as well, WNPR.org, in case you want to find more information about this new law. Kevin Counihan, thank you very much. We'll have to have you back. Obviously, we have more questions than 1 hour can hold. Thank you very much. Thanks also to Zach Cooper from Yale University. Thank you very much for your time and expertise.
Thanks, Adam.
And thanks to Ariel Levin-Becker from the Connecticut Mirror. Thank you, Ariel.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jeff Cohen from WNPR.
You're welcome.
Our program is produced by Tucker Ives with Betsy Kaplan and Heather Brandon. The senior producer is Katie Tolarski. Thanks to CTN Today. This is Where We Live.